The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Destroying the public space. It's about destroying a public federal involvement in education. It's about clean air, clean water, food safety, public safety. You name it, they're there to diminish it, destroy it.
Can you imagine a psychotic like this? Can you imagine this woman was once the third most powerful woman in the world? Nancy Pelosi saying the American people don't care about the deficit, they want to destroy the government, speaking to the communist group Think Progress. So what can I tell you? When we have a psychotic left-wing party like this who says that if you criticize their spending, you're out to destroy the government, there's no hope for this country. It would take an act of God to save us from people like her and Obama. The man melts down the economy and then rushes off to a barbecue. Now he's going on another vacation. Now we wake up and find out that we have a 22% increase in food stamp usage since the great one took power. 45.8 million people are collecting food stamps. Let me repeat that for you deadbeats out there, you bums, you. 45.8 million people are collecting food stamps since the communist Obama took power. Now you say, well, they needed the food stamps. Well, some may need the food stamps, but not all of them. We've all seen excesses. We've seen food stamp abuse. Every one of us has been in a store and seen them using them. They're also traded like currency, as you well know, because of the corruption that exists in the food stamp use. This is a program that's out of control. And yet we have a man who continues to spread the food stamp epidemic, and there's a reason for it. It's not because the people behind Obama are compassionate that they're spreading the use of food stamps. It's because, like in the old days in Chicago, in order to get the bums to vote, they'd give them a $5 bottle of cherry brandy. Just study your history. The way they got the bums off the Bowery to vote is they gave them a $5 bottle of brandy, and they put them into the polls. This is the same thing. Instead of giving a $5 bottle of brandy, they're giving them a food stamp, making them responsible. Where the country is going is Chavez. Chavez. This man is taking us down that road. If you see what happened to the middle class under Chavez, that's what's going to happen to the middle class here. They fled. They ran out of that country because of the dictator Chavez. This man is going to drive the middle class into the poorhouse and out of the country. At least that's one man's opinion. Food stamp nation, 45.8 million people on food stamps. Government payroll increased by 117,000, while the number of U.S. workers dropped by 38,000. It's absolutely a communist dictatorship. In the early stages now, you see, that's why you don't know it. Because the old game is to do it slightly. And here we have a wonderful man running for the presidency, Rick Perry. And he believes in God, he believes in Jesus. And he's going to have a prayer for a nation in crisis. And the vermin in the media, the atheists and the communists, the socialists, the Leninists, the vermin, in other words, the filth. You don't know the contempt I have. You don't know the contempt I have for the Anderson Coopers, the Andrea Mitchells, the Wolf Blitzers. You have no idea. You should be in a living room with me when I see these get on the air. You have no idea what I go through in the house. If you think me calling her, I called Anderson Cooper a terrible thing the other day. I admit it. I compared him to a pussy foot. I said he is the equivalent of someone who has pus in a foot, an incurable disease. I don't care that he wears V-shirts and goes to the gym. The man is spreading like this disease, this mind disease. He talked about the Arab Spring. Do you remember what Anderson Cooper did? He glowed about it because there were young men in tight pants with Blackberries. He talked about the Arab Spring as though it was going to bring about democracy. How was it that I knew that the Islamists were waiting in the wings, and because they were more violent and less human, they were going to take over Egypt and all of the other countries in the Arab Crescent? Why did I know that and Hillary Clinton didn't know it? Obama didn't know it. Susan Rice didn't know it. Brzezinski didn't know it. Or did they? Well, if they did, then we're in worse trouble than even I think. So here we are. So now we have a man, Rick Perry, governor of Texas. Actually quite a moderate Republican, incidentally. He's no extremist whatsoever, nor is he even a true right-winger. I mean, he's a very good conservative, but he's a moderate conservative. The man shows a scintilla of belief in God, a faith in his religion. And the same vermin, the very same vermin who fall on all fours for Muslims, who collapse and go into paroxysms of worship, if you dare say the word Islam or Muslim, the very same vermin in the media attack the Christian because they're Christophobes. They suffer a Christophobic effect. They are Christophobic at their core. And it's frightening to watch this. Andrea Mitchell should be forced to broadcast through a surgical mask. To me, she's like Typhoid Mary. Her and her old man, what's his name, Alan Greenspan, should be investigated. And if they're as guilty as I think they are of plying the government media complex trade, they should be indicted and charged to the full extent of the law. 1-800-449-8255. This is the Savage Nation. It's Rock and Roll Friday. Any topic is fair game. Any topic is fair game. Anything. It's open mic to mic. Anything you want to talk about. Country's melting down under Chavez. Unbelievable to me. I don't know how he gets away. Well, I do know how he gets away with it. If you have 45.8 million people dependent on Obama, there's nothing he can do that's wrong. Instead of giving out little bottles of cherry brandy to drunks, he gives out little green stamps to the dependent. Green Bay, Wisconsin. Vicky, you're on the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Thank you, Dr. Savage, for taking my call. I just wanted to be able to share a little incident that happened with me last weekend when I was in the grocery store. I'm standing in line trying to pay for my groceries, and the two ladies in front of me, dressed to the nines, are using multiple food stamps and taking twice as long trying to check out as anyone else because they have to sign each and every one of these things.
Oh, yes. Well, they're special people. You see, in animal farms, some animals are more equal than others. If you read your Orwell, you'll see that Orwell predicted this in After a Revolution. Some animals are more equal than others, and obviously they're more equal than you.
I guess so. That must be the situation. I'm a 50.
And tell me what it is that they bought with their food stamps. Did you happen to notice what was in their basket of goods?
There was some alcohol. There was some steaks, which I was not buying. There was a number of things. They did purchase the children's formula with their special stamps.
How many children did they have in tow? Did each of them have a number of children? Because each child produces a certain amount of money from the welfare state as well. Did each of them have a few? Or
no, they did not have any of them with them. But I did want to say that, as I said, they were dressed to the nines with their diamonds and their fingernails done.
Well, can you get your fingernails done on Obama's food stamp plan?
I don't know if you...
Does that include a visit to a Korean nail parlor or in your area or not?
I'm sorry?
Do food stamps have a special area in your neighborhood where you can use them in a Korean nail parlor?
Not to my knowledge. All I know is...
I have a question, by the way. It's a collateral question. Where did this nail polish parlor business spring up from in America over the last 5 or 7 years? We can't blame Obama for that. Where did all of these people come from with nail parlors? Are there really that many women who have their nails and toenails done in this country? So how can we really have that much poverty? I mean, I'm thinking about this. You know, having your nails and toenails done is actually costly. How can every yenta in this country afford to have her nails and toenails done? How is that possible? I don't know, maybe I come from another time. But when I go past the nail parlor and I peek in on my bicycle, I want to gag. I see these grotesque-looking women having their toes rubbed by immigrant women. I don't understand how anybody would do that to another. How could you do that? I don't understand. Who are these women who work in the nail parlors? You talk about slavery. Is that some kind of secret kind of... Do they do that as a... I don't really know how this works. Why are there so many nail parlors in America? And where did all of these nail parlor women come from? I don't know. What's the difference? Are getting the Perry attackers already? He's not a conservative enough. Here we go already. Who do you want as a conservative to run? Not Ron. Who do you want now? Stephen in Houston. He's not conservative enough for you? Why is he not conservative, Rick Perry?
Hi, Michael. I've been listening to you from the day you came on the air. I've been living in Houston, Texas for 11 years, and Rick, I am a diehard conservative. Rick Perry does not believe in borders. He does not believe in culture. He does not believe in language. He is a complete liberal, and we hate him here.
Well, Stephen, having said all of those nice things about Governor Perry, who is it that you think would be suitable for the presidency? Who matches the conservative belief system that you have?
Nobody. Nobody.
All right. So that at least you're willing to admit that nobody is as conservative as you. So therefore, don't we have to now accept the best we can get?
But if this is the best we can get, I can't take it anymore. Choosing between two evils again and again and again.
I have no answer to that. I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation. Open mic to Mike. Call me.
Savage.
It is Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation. We survived another week of Obama. He's busy raising funds, of course, not amongst the food stamp users. Tennessee Renee, you are a food stamp recipient, and you have something to say. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
I wanted to say that did it occur to anyone out there that when they see people using food stamps at the grocery market, that they're actually using them for what they're meant to be used for instead of buying drugs, even though it does happen? It does happen.
But I don't understand what you're saying. You mean all users of food stamps are using them responsibly?
Yes, yes, sir.
You know that for a fact?
Oh, there's fraud. I'm not saying there's not.
All right. Well, at least we can agree on that. There's fraud. How did America survive before food stamps? How did poor people survive without food stamps before food stamps? How did they survive?
Well, they worked.
They worked. The big W word. So why are there so many lazy people who won't take menial jobs in this country, instead having illegal aliens take them?
Everybody's so hard on the people. There's a lot of things going on that's bigger than you and I, and that's with our government.
What do you mean bigger than you and I? I mean, how much bigger is it than I work for a living and you work for a living and they don't? The people on food stamps don't work. They're lazy bums.
Not really, sir. Maybe they're down on their luck.
Down on their luck? Well, that's terrific. It's too bad. And I'm supposed to pick up the tab? For them to go in jewels and diamonds and get back into a Lexus or a Mercedes, which I hear about over and over again, you know that millions of them are scamming the system.
Problem. I mean, the taxpayers bailed out the bankers, too. Nobody's fussing about that.
What do you mean, no one? I've been screaming about it for years.
Well,
no one's in favor of bailing out the bankers, but that doesn't make two wrongs don't make a right.
Then, you know.
Excuse me. No, don't go over my words. I have been criticizing the bailout of the banks with the TARP money ever since it happened. Two wrongs do not make a right, Renee. That doesn't mean that we should now say everyone who collects food stamps is entitled to them.
Well, I'm just saying, don't be so judgmental, because actually those people that...
Don't be judgmental? Whoa, what do you mean don't be judgmental? Without my judgment, I'd be nothing. I'd be a vegetable.
At least look at...
Well, you're being judgmental. You're calling me judgmental.
At least maybe they're
Wait a minute. You're judging me, aren't you? You're saying don't be judgmental. That's a typical liberal credo. I am judgmental, and so are you. You just judged me and said I'm being judgmental, didn't you? You're using your judgment to say I'm being judgmental.
I have a little more compassion for people. I know it's tough.
Oh, you have more compassion. Do you give them out of your own pocket, or do you like the fact that they take it from my pocket?
It makes everybody bitter. But I think...
Renee, you're not answering a single question. Either you can't hear me or you're purposely ignoring me. Do you yourself use food stamps?
Yes, sir, I do.
Okay, so you're very defensive about it.
Well, another thing, I'm on disability Social Security, too. I am.
Oh, well, I'm glad you're having a good day. That's very nice to hear. Terrific. I'm glad you got such a benevolent government. Social Security, disability, the food stamp, free legal, free medical. You get free nail care. They give you the car, the cell phone. You get your hair done once a week from Obama. Is that going to be a right next? A hair stamp. I hear that Obama's considering putting out a beauty parlor stamp so that people on welfare don't feel second class or third class, and they can have self-esteem. And they can go to the beauty parlor like those rich middle-class women who work for a living and go. How dare they go to a beauty parlor while people on food stamps don't? No, they should put out a hair stamp. That's what I think Obama should do, is put out a hair stamp that you can redeem at any barbershop or beauty parlor, and you could use it for nails, hair. I think, and in addition to that, when as the welfare state grows, think of the unlimited possibilities. He could also put out a pet stamp. Why should a poor person's dog not look as good as my dog, Teddy? I mean, I send my dog, Teddy, to Irene twice a week. He comes back smelling good, looking good, feeling good, plays good, looks good, has better self-esteem. Now, why should some poor person have a mangy cur in the streets? I mean, I walk by homeless people with pit bulls. I feel bad for them that their pit bull is not manicured. And I think that Obama should expand the welfare state and put out dog stamps, which can be redeemed at any dog salon, so that the pit bulls in the gutters can be given a proper hair and bath. Because, after all, I don't want to be so judgmental as to look down upon a pit bull owned by a homeless person. I want them to feel as equal to my dog as possible, equal to Teddy. Teddy, as a matter of fact, is with the care person now. I'm actually honored that the woman who's on food stamps, welfare, disability, is listening to the show. I appreciate it. But I hope she heard me say that I'm just as outraged by the bailout of Citibank, J.P. Morgan. I know about the bailouts. They're all in my book, Trickle Up Poverty. And believe me, as far as I'm concerned, it was one of the biggest criminal ripoffs in history, and it was orchestrated by the Obama administration. $800 million went right into the hands of the banks, who should have been allowed to fail. Okay? If I went bankrupt, I'd fail, wouldn't I? The government wouldn't bail me out on the radio, would they?
Savage.
So Pelosi gave a secret speech that she didn't know was being recorded to the communist group Think Progress. And she gets into this kind of a whispery thing about, she builds herself up. And she said, it's not about reducing the deficit. It's about destroying government, education, clean air, destroying food safety, clean water. They're out to destroy the government. So we're talking about food stamps somehow, led us to food stamps today. When we read that 45.8 million Americans are on food stamps and that the number has gone up 22% since Chavez Obama took over the United States government, and that in the old days they would give out a small bottle of brandy to bums on the Bowery to get them to vote in Chicago. Now they give them a small green stamp, a little book of stamps. You know, you're not going to believe that anyone on food stamps is going to vote for a Republican, are you? I said, just use your common sense. Would anyone on food stamps ever vote for anyone but a Democrat socialist? No. Which is why I say if you're on any government assistance, you should lose the right to vote. I stand by those words. I stand by those words. Because by nature, you're going to want to vote yourself a raise if you're receiving government subsidies of any kind. You're going to say, of course I want to vote for a socialist who's going to give me more. But whose pocket does it come out of? It comes out of those who produce, those of us who pay taxes. I would say only those who pay taxes and above a certain amount should have a vote. And I think it's very fair, by the way. I absolutely think that's the only way to save America. Does it have any chance politically? No. But I am a talk show host. I'm not a politician. I'm proposing an idea that I know cannot ever be enacted in this country, which is doomed to fail as a republic. However, I know that I could save the republic if we applied some common sense. No corporate welfare. Make General Electric, for example, which earned $5.3 billion, the last I checked, and paid no income taxes, make them pay their fair share, make the other corporations that may not be paying taxes pay their fair share, stop the deportation of factories and manufacturing overseas, impose a 20% tariff on Chinese goods. Overnight, A 20% tariff on Chinese goods would overnight create such a demand for American manufacturing. Look, I have studied this. I'm not just throwing it out for effect. I will tell you right now that during the war, the early days of America, a 50% tariff was put on British goods by the early American colonialists. Do you know why? Why would they have put a 50% tariff on British-made goods in the early days of the American Republic? Because they needed to stimulate domestic manufacturing and domestic purchasing of domestic-made goods. So they said, we're putting a 50% tariff on British goods. What happened was it spurred the greatest growth in American history, the greatest growth at the time, exponential increase, because people were then making things and they were buying things that were made domestically. The same would happen again. But the reason it can't happen is because corrupt, greedy ex-politicians like, you want me to name them, now work as China lobbyists. Shall I name a few of them for you? Bob Dole, the last I checked. A man who was a war hero became a total sellout. Madeleine Halfbright, one of the stupidest, craziest women in the history of American politics, a woman who was so ugly that she takes your breath away. It's like climbing to the top of a mountain and looking into hell itself. Here is a woman who was so ugly that she's deranged. I'm saying this because you've got to understand how they get into government. The crazier they are, the higher they climb. I've never seen anything like it. The woman wrote a biography a few years ago. Bear with me. You know who I'm talking about? Remember that very hefty, frighteningly ugly Secretary of State under Clinton, Madeleine Albright? One of the ugliest women in the history of the world, politically and physically. She writes a biography about herself, an autobiography. She calls it Pins. I swear to God. Pins, meaning her legs were so great, she thought, that world leaders were falling all over themselves in order to do things for America. This is a deranged human being. She was Secretary of State. Now what is she doing? She's lobbying for China in the United States of America. Sandy Berger, Sox Berger, lobbying for China. These are some of the few that we know. How in the world can you ever impose tariffs when they can go out and they can start lobbying congressmen and say, nah, you don't want tariffs? Why, that'll cripple America. We believe in free trade. Yeah, free trade, my eye. You go try to export something to China and see how free it is. In fact, you go try to export something to Mexico and see how difficult it is. Every country on earth has trade barriers against our goods, and we're the only country on earth that has no trade barriers against garbage that comes in here. No wonder we don't make televisions and cameras. No wonder our auto industry is dying, etc. But there's a solution to this problem. We have the most productive workers on the planet. I've studied the RAND Corporation documents on this. The American worker is the hardest working worker on the planet. The most efficient worker on the planet is the American worker. That's right. And so what we need are politicians who put America first, not last. I know this is starting to sound like a stump speech. Maybe it should be. Maybe I'll get so angry one day that I'll run for office, which will never happen. Frankly, don't call now and say, Mike, run, please. Don't take any of those calls. I stumbled into it. I made the fatal radio mistake. It's like saying there are four things you can't say in radio. If I name them, I'll give my competition too much ammunition. I've known people who've killed their careers with four topics. They're known as the third rail of talk radio. Oh, the board lights up. And the fools think that they're actually popular. You lose 98% of your audience, but the 2% of fanatics who call about it. All I have to do is say reload. There's some code words like reload. There was a guy on radio, very nice man. I shouldn't do it because I don't mean to mock him. He's a very nice guy. But if you said anything to do with an airplane, no matter what he was talking about, he'd go into like bomber missions from World War II. If you said, oh, darn, I was out on the lake last week and a fly was bothering me. It was like a Manchurian candidate. The next thing he'd be talking about, well, we were flying over Berlin and those bombs, you know, that kind of thing. You can't say fly, aileron. You can't say wing. You know, I went to the turkey dinner. Man, do I love those wings. Beam, out of business. I love those turkey wings. The next thing, we were flying over Korea in that bat wing plane, and this is the way it went. Nicest guy in the world. There are trigger words that set people off. It's the same with talk radio audiences. If there are four topics you can never, ever talk about on radio, you will destroy your audience. I'm not going to tell you what they are, giving you an example. Reload. You can get gun nuts to call day and night. Day and night. All you got to do is start saying anything to do with ballistics or look at a cartridge and look at the amount of powder in a cartridge. That's the end of the show. 3 days you're going to get callers on it. I'm not mocking them. I appreciate men who can reload their guns, but it's not something I want to talk about. And the average person doesn't want to talk about it either. I mean, I'll talk about food stamps. because I know that there's a nightmare in the nation when you have 45.8 million people on food stamps, and the amount of graft, just commonsensical, would tell you what. What percent would you say is graft? How much of those food stamps are being, how many food stamps, what percentage are being used by people who don't need them? How many food stamps, dollar-wise, are being traded and sold? Do you know they're being sold? Do you know that? Do you know that there are people who are not poor who get food stamps and sell them, like counterfeit money, for, let's say, 10 cents on the dollar? Let's say a food stamp has a dollar value, they sell it for 10 cents. Haven't you any idea what's going on in this country? Nicole in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello. I'm a food stamp recipient. I surely don't misuse them. I wish I didn't have to use them. I by no means, I also am on SSI. But by the time I'm done paying rent, I have $60 to pay for any of my paper goods. And it's sad. I can't
so
even...
So why is it that you don't work? You're disabled?
Yes.
How old are you?
I'm just about 40.
And how long has it been since you've held a regular job?
About 6 years.
Okay. And what kind of injury did you incur?
It's a mental disability.
But
I want to work. And I have.
Isn't that sad? In other words, you're so disturbed that you can't work, but you know how to collect a food stamp.
Not that I want to.
What about the days in America when people were emotionally upset, but they didn't have the leisure to go out and have the government take care of them? They had to work anyway, even with their emotional upsets. Whatever happened in those days?
Well, they did plant crops. They didn't go out.
Well, they did other things. They worked in factories the way the illegal aliens are. These are not jobs that most people would want, but it's the only jobs that they could get. If you were emotionally upset or you're physically, let's say, unable to do other things, you took menial jobs to get through to feed yourself. Is there anything wrong with that concept?
Being an illegal alien? Yeah.
No, about working. About working. Is that alien to you?
No, I want to work.
Yes.
I can't find a job.
Well, you have no incentive to find a job if the government makes it so easy for you to stay home.
No, I mean, I am literally going out, filling out 5 to 6 applications daily.
And what kind of jobs are you looking for, Nicole?
Any.
Would you work in an ice cream factory for 10 hours a day packing ice cream into boxes?
Absolutely.
And you can't get a factory job?
There's nothing here in Broome County.
Well, that's why people move when they can't find jobs in the county that they live in or the rent is too high. They leave the high rent district for a low rent district. They move to Iowa somewhere and they take a job in a meat plant.
I'm in a rural area and a mobile home.
Well, but you like it there because it's peaceful and quiet, right?
The woman calling in talking about the people signing, it was WIC. It wasn't they were signing for food stamps. You don't sign anything.
So that's another government program. Women and infant children, WIC?
Yeah, but she wasn't signing.
Well, that's another government program for another group of people. But don't you see how this affects those of us who work so hard for our living and we come home with 50% of what we make? Don't you see what it does to us, how angry we are?
Absolutely, and I'm all for it, and I'm totally against
it. I'm not putting you down, nor am I angry, and I hope you're not angry. I'm trying to show you two sides to this story, Nicole. I'd be a fool to sit here and make a mockery of you. That's not my goal. But we have people like myself, people much less fortunate than I am, who earn less than I do. But I'm working every day of my life, and I come home with 50% roughly of what I earn. State, federal, local taxes steal $1 out of $2, 50 cents on every dollar stolen from me by government bureaucrats. And where does that money go? It goes in their own pocket. It goes for their pensions. It goes for the maintenance of the county or the state or the federal government. And then the rest of it goes to people who are recipients of various and sundry so-called entitlements. There's not enough money to go around, Nicole. That's the problem. I appreciate it, and I wish you luck with your disability. I really mean that. But let me explain something to you. A lot of people fall back upon, I'm too sick to work. I'm too this to work. Now, real disability is one thing. Okay, let's clear the air. But then there's an entire gray zone of people who say, I have emotional illness and I can't work. I'm emotionally disturbed. Those are the crackpot therapists who give them the right, you know, the bill, the clean bill. All right, it's like the golden parachute, you know what I mean, on a poor scale. Say, well, they're not living high on the hog. No, but they're not working. They're lazy. They're sitting at home watching television. A lot of people would like to sit home in a trailer in a rural district and look at cow flop and Oprah Winfrey. They'd enjoy it every day. They got the well water. They got Oprah. They got the food stamp. They get the government cheese. What more do they need? They don't want to work. But there was a time in America where you couldn't get away with that. You'd rot rather than the government give you something because there was no money for you. So you took menial jobs. You took any job you could get, cleaning toilets, picking vegetables, working in an ice cream factory, working in a slaughterhouse. These jobs still exist. But there's an entire class of American who would, by nature or by bad luck, be doing these jobs, but they don't have to do them because the government gives them a free pass. And so the only people who are doing them are the 30 million illegal aliens who are here who will clean the toilets, pick the vegetables, and do the other jobs that Americans will not do anymore. And the reason they won't do them is they don't have to because they've got food stamps, they've got welfare, and they've got many, many other benefits which permit them to stay at home, drive around perhaps in a broken-down car, but still not work. And that's a trade-off. They're happy to sit in the cafes of North Beach, San Francisco, pretend that they're poets and famous writers waiting to be discovered, that it wasn't for the evil fill-in-the-blank in Hollywood. They would have a film script that would have been made into a movie, and they'd be bigger than Steven Spielberg. Or, you know, it ranges from city bums to country bums. The problem is that we don't have the money for everybody anymore. We never did. It was all part of the scam. The bottom line is the news story for you to take home is that the number of people on food stamps went up 22% since Obama took office. There are now 45.8 million Americans on food stamps. Where does this money come from? That's, again, part of the Nancy Pelosi, part of the Harry Reid, part of the Barack Obama buying votes. This is how it works. And I would attest that I strongly believe, as a man who believes in the U.S. Constitution, that if you are on government assistance, you temporarily lose your right to vote. And the reason I say it is because naturally you're going to want to vote for those who promise to give you more benefits at the expense of those of us who work. And so when if you were to lose your vote and you're on welfare, which you should lose your right to vote, because you're voting yourself a raise no matter what. And that will lead us to the demagoguery that we have today under Obama and the Democrats who are promising you more. But then you would have an incentive to go back to work. You say, I want to be self-respecting. I want to vote again, so I'm going to go and get a job. I want to get off welfare. It would be an incentive to get you on your feet again. Don't you understand that? Otherwise, you're just a slave. You are a slave on the government plantation. You may not know it, but if you're collecting welfare or you're collecting any of these other benefits, you are a slave on the government plantation. Now, I got to take a quick break now. I'll be right back. Savage. This is a very, very difficult topic, which is the poor amongst us, because there must be compassion from people who are, God-fearing people. But America being fundamentally a nation founded upon Jewish law and Christian law is the most compassionate nation on earth. There is no question about it. Never mind the garbage you read or you hear from the libs. They all tell you how wonderful Denmark is, but how come they don't move there? They all tell you how wonderful the socialist countries are, Norway, Denmark, but they don't move there, do they? So you have to understand that there will always be poor amongst us and that we have to have compassion for the poor. But the question is how much compassion and how much can we afford? That's all. It's common sense. If you look at the Bible, listen to this. You know, we know that Muslims don't believe in interest, right? Because they get it from the Quran, and the Quran got it from the Old Testament, because it's in Exodus. Exodus says, if thou lend money to any of my people, even to the poor with thee, thou shalt not be to him as a creditor, neither shall ye lay upon him interest. Okay, great. Go tell that to the local loan officer. Okay, go tell them you don't want to pay interest on your mortgage. See what happens. So we're not living in the olden days. Thou shalt not utter a false report. Put not thy hand with the wicked to be an unrighteous witness. Thou shalt not follow a multitude to do evil. Now that's an interesting one. See, there are many rules and laws from the Old Testament that make good sense, and there are many that we can't follow any longer. You cannot be a biblical absolutist in this day and age. You cannot. However, I mean, where do you think our common law comes from? Many of you don't even understand it. It all comes from the Bible. The atheist would deny it, but the foundation of all of our law is the Bible. All of it comes from the Bible. Every last inch of the sane laws, let's put it to you that way, before we became insane and the perverts took over the legal institutions and twisted the laws. I mean, I have to even qualify what I'm saying, because sometimes I forget who I'm even talking to out there. When you see the twisted laws that these psychos put in. What, because they wear a black robe, they're holy? How can we know that there are many priests who molest children and we've ceased to have any faith in the men of God? We don't trust anybody anymore, whether they be a rabbi or a priest. We're all cautious about all of them now. But you can't apply the same thing to a judge? What, they put on a black robe, they're suddenly all holy and clean? Some of them are saintly. Many of them are not. Some of them are not saintly. Some of them are just simply corrupt lawyers, the lowest of the low, who use the power of the courts to do corrupt things. So where does that leave us with regard to people on food stamps and welfare? It means, in plain English, we don't have the money for it anymore. And something's got to give. We have to cut. There's 47.8 million people on food stamps. 22% increase since Obama took office. Why? Because he's buying votes. The way Chavez bought votes, the votes of the poor, to bring about his communist revolution, his socialist communist revolution in South America. That's exactly what Obama is doing here. It's as clear as a bell to me, and I'm as clear thinking as anybody in this world.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation. So here we are on a Friday. We survived another week of Obama, who wrecked the economy, took a wrecking hammer to the economy, said not only will we not rein in the spending, not only will we not cut welfare and food stamps, we're going to increase the spending, we're going to increase the food stamps, increase the welfare, and now I'm going off to a barbecue. And then I'm going to go to Martha's Vineyard to collect millions more, and then I'm going to go to have a party at Harvey Weinstein's house next week. In Manhattan at his village house, it's $75,000 a couple because I care for the poor. I care for the poor, so it's $75,000 for a couple to see me at the fundraiser of Harvey Weinstein, one of America's most stupendous citizens, a man well-respected in the film industry for his integrity, for his honesty, and his prompt payment of bills. Listener indiscretion is advised in the Savage Nation. So all of these things are going on. 45.8 million people are on food stamps, up 22% since Obama took office. And here's the headline in the San Francisco newspaper. I'm not making this up now. Here's a headline on the front page of the San Francisco newspaper to show you why it's so charming and how they could have Nancy Pelosi as one of their heroines. Woman has car stolen at gunpoint by man she met at sex club. A woman had her car stolen at gunpoint in San Francisco early this morning by a man she met at a sex club in the city's Tenderloin neighborhood, police said. The carjacking was reported, I'm not making this up, at 4 a.m. near the intersection of 7th and Howard Streets. The 38-year-old victim met the suspect, the man in his 20s, at the Power Exchange, a sex club. They give the exact address, by the way. After the pair left in the woman's car, a 2006 green BMW, the suspect pulled out a handgun and told the woman to get out of the car, police said. The woman complied, and the man fled with her car. The woman was not injured during the carjacking, according to police. The suspect and car have not been found. Now, here's the tipper. They ask you, anyone with information, to call the police. They don't identify the suspect, what he looks like, what his race is, nothing. But they ask you to contact the police in case you should have any tips on it. What is this world coming to that you can't trust the people you meet at sex clubs in San Francisco anymore? How is this possible? That we cannot even trust people at sex clubs in San Francisco? How in the world can this world go on? Terrible, terrible story to believe this. What else is in the news? Everything and nothing. 1-800-449-8255. So many people on welfare, and that's their number one story. Woman has car stolen at gunpoint by a man she met at sex club. And they tell you to call the police if you know anything about the suspect with no identification. White, black, Asian, Hispanic, 5 feet six, six. No, no identification. That's the San Francisco newspaper, which is why I love being here. That's how we wind up with Nancy Pelosi as a congresswoman and a speaker of the House. That's how Barbara Boxer holds on to her job. That's how Dianne Feinstein and her husband get away with what they get away with. It's just wonderful having a non-newspaper in the city. A non-newspaper that loses $1 million a week, the last I checked. So do you agree with me that if a person is on public assistance, they should temporarily lose their right to vote? Is that as controversial as it sounds? Why is that controversial? Why should a person on welfare be able to vote? They're always going to vote themselves a raise. They're always going to vote for the demagogue who promises them more than they already have, like Obama and food stamps. So why is it that we taxpayers tolerate that people on public assistance can vote with the same vote that you have? You work 40, 50, 60 hours a week. You pay your taxes. You have one vote. They have one vote? Why should they have one vote? That's why we're losing the country. It's a simple equation. I think I'm right. I know it can't pass, but I know that I'm right. Common sense and politics are not necessarily one and the same, just as the law and justice are not the same. We understand that the law and justice are not the same at all. The chasm between law and justice is insurmountable. Listener indiscretion is advised. Give me some rock and roll, and I'll take some calls. Come on, let me give some rock and roll. I should really be in the High Sierra fishing right now. I should be off the Golden Gate Bridge trolling for salmon. Salmon are running off the gate now. Here's a big fishing season out here. I don't like fishing, though. That's the problem. I'd rather buy it in Safeway. All right, I don't like that song. I'm not into that semi-blues. Can you give me some rock and roll? What is that? What brand? Yes, it's me and I'm in love. Turn it off. Come on, all right. I'm not even interested in music. I'm in a whacked out mood after this week. I can hardly focus. I went to the dentist yesterday, and then I had to go on the air because of the crash in the stock market. I was delirious. I got to tell you about the dental experience. Going to a dentist is the equivalent of having an embalmer working on you, only you're still awake. When you hear like the thing they put in your mouth where they suck fluids out of you, it's so eerie. It's the closest thing to being dead while being alive is being in a dental chair. The old days in the dental office, when you gargled you could gargle and they let you up for a minute to clean your mouth out. I don't have to spell it out. But then the vermin in the dental business figured out that if they put a tube in the mouth with a suction, they could leave you laying there like a salmon while they worked on you, and they wouldn't lose a second. They could hop from chair to chair. In other words, you now have become like a piece of salmon, like a piece of lox laying there in the chair. It's not for your sake that they put a tube in your mouth and suck out the fluid like an embalmer. It's so the dentist can do the job more efficiently and make more money. That's all. So I'm laying there. I go in. I thought I was going in to have... I must admit, I told you about a big deal. I had an implant put in a year ago. They put the titanium pin in the jaw, right? So I snapped one 2 years ago after a dinner with Romney. It had nothing to do with having a dinner with Romney, but it happened to have that happen that night, I swear to you, now that I think about it. I went to dinner with Romney a year ago, December, and I had the pin in. It was in a month with a false tooth, and then later on they put in a real tooth. I went to dinner with Romney. I came home very, very agitated and excited. I was talking about it, and I bit into a piece of hard Italian bread and snapped the pin. It was like a ping, and that was the end of it. So that was horrible. So I had to go all over again. So I went back. I had the pin put in again. I don't know when it was. I don't know what month it is. Everything's a blur. But 3 months later, you're supposed to come in, and then they replace the thing with a real whatever. So I thought I was going in this time yesterday to put the gel in the mouth, the algae, the alginate, where you sit with it. And you can't. I have all sorts of tricks, by the way, to get through a dental office. I have my own self-hypnosis, you know, to sit with that horrible stuff in your mouth and not run out of there screaming. You know what self-control it takes? What people must do. It's an interesting phenomenon. What do people do when they're sitting there with all sorts of weird things in their mouth and uncomfortable? I have my own techniques at this stage. So anyway, to make it long story, I go in, and I assumed that it was just going to be, you know, in and out. The algae in the mouth, the alginate in the mouth, hold on to it. I knew it would be 30 seconds, a minute. You know, you gag on it a little, and you get a mold, a negative mold, and he'd make a tooth, and No, he had something else in store for me. Without any advance warning, I had 90 minutes on my back in that chair with tubes, and he cooked out a diamond saw, and he cut out the old tooth because he couldn't find the screw to remove it. It turned into a nightmare scenario. So I had to go through every imaginable technique that I've ever learned in my entire life to sustain the pain without getting out of there, without getting up. I got up once because the blood went to the back of my head. I was getting dizzy. And he got mad when I said, after 50 minutes of laying there, I said, I got to get up for a minute. Oh, you got to get up? Yeah, I got to get up. I'm dizzy. Oh, you're dizzy? So even he had to let go for a minute. You know, that took 2 minutes for me to get up. I got up, laid down again. And again, the drills and the bits and the suction and looking down at me and the light in the eye and the sun. I wear sunglasses. He didn't even warn me what he was going to do. He didn't tell me to take an aspirin. He didn't tell me to take a Valium. He didn't tell me to take a pain pill. It was a nightmare, but I got through it in 90 minutes. In fact, I have some methodology, some self-hypnosis I use and tricks, where I literally was no longer in the dental chair. I felt like Dustin Hoffman in that movie where the Nazi's working on his teeth. What's that one? The Boys from Brazil. No, with a Running Man. Was it Running Man? With that old Dustin Hoffman movie where the guy gets him and starts drilling him without anesthesia? What was that movie? Huh? You don't know. And the name of the movie was I Don't Know. There was a movie with Dustin Hoffman where a Nazi dentist gets him in a chair, and he straps him in, and he works on him with the drills. And no anesthesia, and he sees the drill coming at him. Marathon Man. I swear to God, it was like Marathon Man yesterday in dental office. So one of the tricks I used to get through this was thinking about what I was going to eat the minute it was through. I swear to you, I have such craziness with food. In the middle of this torture, a normal person would not think of food. They'd be gagging. The last thing on their mind would be what they're going to eat. I'm thinking about what I'm going to eat the minute I get out of the dental chair, and I'll share that with you the minute I come back.
Savage.
So I've segued from food stamps and welfare recipients and Obama's food stamp nation to my experience in the dental chair yesterday. And I have a real treat for you. I mean, it's a treat for you, not for me. What you're about to hear was recorded yesterday in the dental office. Play it.
I'm not going into that cavity. That nerve's already dying. A live, freshly cut nerve is infinitely more sensitive.
So I'll just drill into a healthy tooth until I reach the pulp. Unless, of course, you can tell me that it's safe.
God. That was actually from Marathon Man, but it was exactly like what I went through yesterday. I came in thinking I was just going to, you know, waltz in for 30 minutes and stick my mouth in some alginate and leave. He had something else in mind. He didn't even tell me take an aspirin. I don't know. Maybe I was better off because I didn't build up for it. He couldn't find the screw to remove the tooth on the pin. It got lost, the cotton, and drilled, and I felt like somebody was banging inside my cranium. It was astounding what went on there. I walked out dizzy, but I'm trying to tell you, The dental nightmare, I developed several techniques, sort of auto-hypnosis to get through painful situations. It's nothing compared to women. There's not a man on earth who can put up with what a woman puts up with giving birth. Let me start from the top. In scales of pain, nothing equals childbirth. And every woman's a hero compared to men. We're wimps compared to women. The pain score of childbirth is off the charts. No, most men could not ever, ever take the pain of giving birth. So let's start with the fact. Let's applaud our women. Okay, let's applaud the women. That's number one. Number two, in fact, I'm going to put it in a delicate way. I remember when I was a freshman in college at Queens College, which is a long time ago. We had what I now look back to know. She was a feminist professor of psychology. I had no idea what a feminist was. I didn't know what they were. I didn't know what it was. But she was a blonde woman, and she was obviously a feminist. But she sat us in Psych 101. I remember sitting up there in those the bleachers, like inside the classroom. And she was talking about this and that. Who was paying attention? You know, I was a kid in college. Mine was on 500 other things. And then she says, you guys out there, she said, you could never, ever, ever tolerate giving birth. Women are much tougher than you are. And we didn't know what she was talking about. She said, okay, try to imagine passing a grapefruit through your rectum. Now, that got our attention. That's what she said. And after that that mental image, you know, I decided not to go into psychology or psychiatry. For a while, I was thinking about it. But I said, no, I don't want to deal in such grotesque imagery for the rest of my life. But having said that, I have my own methodology. And one of them is thinking about what I'm going to eat. I think of pleasurable things in the middle of the drilling and the banging and the knocking. So the first thing I said was, I'm just going to eat comfort food the minute I get out of here. And then the suction every 2 minutes, I'm gagging on it. I'm thinking of pizza and beer the minute I get out of the dental chair. I know it doesn't sound normal to you, but my weakness is pizza and beer. I don't know how I'm not 350 pounds, but I'm not. I'm in fairly good shape. I bicycle every day, and I watch my diet. But when I really want to relax, a pizza and beer does it for me. It has been since I'm a child. It's exactly what I did. I was dazed, in pain, couldn't think, couldn't talk, couldn't walk. But I got myself to a local Italian restaurant, and I sat, and I ordered two pizzas and a beer. I swear to you. Oh, did I have pain all night? And I went on the radio yesterday, no less. Now, during the mess, I count. I have a thing with fingers. Did you know about this trick? And I'm just going to give it to you, then I'll go on to politics. Try this the next time you're in a dental chair or experiencing any kind of, let's say, procedure that you're not, you know, at all comfortable with and you're passive. Make your hand, like, okay, take your two hands, blah, blah, blah. And count on your hands, but make sure each finger moves when you count. So start with the pinky on your left and go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Count on your 6, 7, 8. And lift up the fingers while you're doing it, because in order for you to project the energy through your brain to the finger, your mind is now off the region of pain that you're in. You follow what I'm saying? So you're saying 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And then go back down the scales and constantly lift your fingers as you count them in the chair. And that will take your brain off the region of pain. It's one form of auto-hypnosis that works for me. There are others. You can lift a leg in a dental chair. I know it sounds crazy. When you're on your back, you can actually lift the leg up and down. What do you care what the dentist thinks of you? He doesn't care what you think of him. Look how he's torturing you. Most of them are sadistic. I found the guys that went into dentistry were, I'm sorry to say it, we all use them and we need them, but there's a little bizarreness there, the dental area. It's a strange phenomenon. Who would go into dental work? You're looking in dirty mouths your whole life, and you're hurting people. All right, you got to make a living, and some of them are very skilled. It's a very skilled profession. Don't knock it. Look at all of the false teeth on television. I mean, you take a look at people like Andrea Mitchell. I mean, without the art of a dentist, you think she'd be where she is? Or you take a look at Doris Kearns Goodwin. They give her false teeth, it looks like to me. I couldn't believe it. I turned on Fox News and they introduced her as a legitimate presidential historian when she was busted for plagiarism a few years ago. And they say on Fox News, and now we're going to introduce Doris Kearns Goodwin. And I see the false teeth, the makeup, and they trained her how to talk, constantly smile. There's a woman who would look better if she didn't smile with that like ghoulish smile. She looked like a cadaver who was trained to smile from the crypt. I could not believe the level that Fox News is going to since Murdoch was put on trial.
Savage.
I'm not going into that cafeteria. That nerve's already dying. A live, freshly cut nerve is infinitely
okay.
more sensitive.
All right, we're talking about how to ward off pain in a dental chair. I mean, why? Because watching Obama is like being in a dental chair at the end of the day. It's like having your teeth drilled without anesthesia. To listen to this man get up there and tell us that he's doing the right thing for America when Standard & Poor are about to downgrade our bonds, our bond ratings, U.S. debt, from its current AAA value. And listen to this man double talk and lie and barbecue and raise money with the rich after attacking the rich. It's enough already. The wealthiest contributors in the world are giving monster amounts of money to Obama. And yet he attacks the millionaires and billionaires, and the next day he's with them. And then you got guys like Harvey Weinstein, who's throwing a $75,000 for a couple to come to his townhouse in Manhattan to host a dinner for Obama. And we're supposed to believe there's no connection between the government media complex. Now, why would a guy like Harvey Weinstein throw a dinner for Obama? You think he wants something for it, or he doesn't want anything for it? What would anyone in the film industry want from Obama? How about carte blanche to continue to put out the pollution that they're running through America? How about carte blanche to continue to put out the most violent, vile films in the history of the world? Filth that nobody should ever be forced to watch or even allowed to watch. The filth and the vermin, the garbage that comes out of the sewer pipe of Hollywood. What do you think they're running a fundraiser from? You think they want to hear the C word? Like, rein it in, Harvey? Or we'll put you out of business? We'll put you in shackles if you continue to make movies glorifying slaughter and murder and chainsaws and sexual deviancy? Of course they're throwing him a dinner. That's all. Oh, you're not in favor of censorship, are you, Mike? How about commonsensical controls in Hollywood as opposed to censorship? How about self-control of the type I use on the radio show? I never use a dirty word, do I? I still have very good ratings, big audience. I don't have to revert to violence and filth in order to get ratings, do I? So why do they have to do it? So listening to Obama and Pelosi saying that Republicans don't care about the deficit, they want to destroy the government itself and destroy the country, is the same as sitting in a dental chair without anesthesia. Frank in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Mike, I got two reasons to do what you did. One is for MRI and the other one is for the dental chair. The dental chair, I press my thumb nail. I let it grow a little bit longer, knowing I'm going to go into the dental and I press it into my skin, and I don't feel the pain. The MRI.
Wait a minute. When you're in the dental chair being sadistically manipulated by a dentist, you actually scarify your hand with your own thumbnail, and it takes your mind off the teeth?
That's correct. Yes. And I got one for MRI in the cup.
Oh, the MRI I had to run out of last year. I went once, the clicking started, I ran out of the hospital.
Well, this is what I do in the MRI.
I could not take it. I cannot take the clicking. It's like going into some medieval torture chamber, click, click, and then I said, stop the music, I'm getting out of here. What did you do to stay in the gurney?
Okay, I clenched both fists very tight, and I pressed my eyes closed very tight until the whole damn thing is over.
Now, how old a man are you, Frank?
Well, that makes no difference. I'm 85.
I'm not knocking you. I'm how old are you that you can still do this?
Well, I've been doing it since I discovered how I can avoid pain. And
you avoid pain by giving yourself pain.
25 years younger than I am. I'm still
Frank, I'm saying you avoid pain by giving yourself pain, right?
Yes, sir. Correct.
Well, that's what marriage was invented for. You see, you can still laugh, which is why you're 25 years, why you look 25, you're 25 years younger than you look, or whatever.
And you're right, and believe me, Mike, I'm there like a 50-year-old guy. Whatever he can do, I can do.
You know who you sound like? It's funny. Your voice is almost identical to the guy who played Meyer Lansky in The Godfather. The same intonation and accent. Are you sure you're not him?
From
the
New
famous.
York. I was born in New York. I'll die in New York. You pick up all the mannerisms of the people.
But I know who it was. Do you know who played? Do you remember the Godfather movie? The Meyer Lansky character. It was a famous director. Actually, he was a drama coach. The most famous played Lansky in that movie. You sound just like him.
What's his name?
I don't know. I don't know his name. I think he's gone, though. He wasn't related to you, but the same exact voice. Hyman Roth was the actor's role, but that's not the guy who played the role. So, Frank, have you been married many years?
Well, it's the guy that had the school of acting.
Yes, that's right. I can't remember his name.
He'll come to me when I hang
Lee up. Lee Strasberg.
Lee Strasberg, right. Right.
I got so agitated talking to you just now that I ripped open a scab on my foot. Frank, let me ask you something. Are you still married?
Yes, sir.
How many years?
51 years.
And isn't it true, and this is something the younger people have to listen to, and be honest with me, you argue occasionally with your wife?
Yes, I do.
And what, it hasn't damaged your marriage, right? You disagree, you have disputes.
Well, Mike, you know, I used to be a traveling salesman. I'm home now, but I still work.
Oh, I heard in between, yeah, the lines. I know you're the traveling salesman.
So, my marriage is intact, but to tell you the truth, the way things are going now, I think I'm going to have to divorce my beautiful wife and marry a beautiful black woman who is employed.
I don't know what the color of her skin has to do with it. Frank, I want one other question answered, and try to be as honest as you can. Haven't you found that marriage has sustained you all of these years and given you strength?
Of course.
Even with the disputes and disagreements, right?
Yes. Marriage isn't just about sex. Sex is only 5% of a marriage. If you do the math and you add up the minutes of all the years that you were married and when you had sex, how many times you had sex.
5%? You must be a sex maniac. What 5%? 5% of your time is spent in bed? You're like a hero. You're like the Cuban Superman. Are you kidding me?
That's right.
I'm joking. Come on, I'm pulling your leg. Oh, hey, look, you're a good sport, Frank. I really appreciate the call. So, in other words, the tricks you just gave the audience, they're going to remember. When you're in dental chair, give yourself more pain than the dentist gives you. And you grow your nail a few days before, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, let the nail grow and dig it into your palm. And the other one is close your eyes till you faint. And then when you go into the MRI, you close your eyes till you black out. Very nice. Thank you very much. Let's hear Hyman Roth. I want to hear this.
I'm a retired investor on a pension. I went to Israel because I wished to live there as a Jew in the twilight of my life.
Oh, yeah. Listening to Obama is the equivalent of getting a root canal without anesthesia. Tells you that he hates millionaires and billionaires, and the next day he's going to them for money. I don't know what's happening to this country. 45.8 million people on food stamps, up 22% since he took office, and we're not supposed to see in plain sight what's going on. Okay, what do you want to talk about? Any topic is not fair game. It's got to be funny. It's got to be poignant. Who gave money the most to Obama? Looking under the packs that they're using, the names. Here we go. Let's see the names here. I got the list here. I don't want to just talk about who gave to Romney. You see, they're trying to say it's the same. But I want to see who gave money to Obama. They're not showing it so much. Da-da-da-da-da. Okay, John Paulson, the hedge fund investor who famously made billions by betting on the housing bubble to burst, gave $1 million to the PAC, but nothing to the Romney campaign. Uh-huh. There we go. Four of the eight wealthy contributors who gave to Obama gave the legal maximum to Obama for 2012. The total of everything, blah, blah, blah. So I got to go do the whole article three times to get to the, what dental hygienist? DreamWorks CEO Jeffrey Katzenberg is Priorities USA Action's biggest donor, giving $2 million to Obama. Now let's pause again. Why would Jeffrey Katzenberg of DreamWorks be one of Obama's campaign's top financiers? Why? Why would the elite Beverly Hills couple, whoever elite means, J.J. Abrams, a star producer and director, never heard of him, and his wife, Katie McGrath, never heard of her, give the legal limit to Obama and an additional $50,000 each to Priorities USA? Why would Abrams host an entertainment industry panel discussion with First Lady Michelle Obama for her, quote, Joining Forces initiative in Hollywood in June? Why? Why do media executives in Hollywood give Obama so much money? answer because they produce the most pornographic and most vile images the world has ever seen, and they don't want the government stopping them. In other words, it's in their business interest to make sure that someone in the White House looks the other way and there's no longer any checks or balances on their, on the sewer pipe that comes out of Hollywood. Does that make sense to you? I'll be right back.
Savage.
Here's a breaking news story, then we'll go back to having fun. Just came out on CNN that the Standard & Poor's ratings agency has reported that it will downgrade the U.S. government's AAA credit rating, but it is reconsidering because they're being lobbied by the Obama government. The government said that S&P is wrong, their analysis is off by trillions of dollars, and S&P should not downgrade the government's AAA credit rating. But apparently, whether or not the government is able to strong-arm Standard & Poor's is irrelevant. We know we're in trouble. Sort of like Greece, you know, Italy, whatever you want to say. We're just giving out too much money and taking in too little in plain English. Now, that old dude who called in the last segment about how he deals with dental pain and other pain, MRI pain, his tricks, he said something that caught my attention. He said, sex is not the most important part of marriage, he said. He said, if you spend only 5% of your time in bed, that's a lot. I said, holy God, the guy's like the Cuban Superman. Well, you wait up the minutes. Let's say you're awake, I don't know, how many hours a day? Well, no, never mind awake. You're how many hours a day are you with your wife of the awakening? You're not awake with her every minute. So he says, if it's 5% of the time you're with your wife, you're in bed, that's enormous. Think about it. The average person goes to work. So they come home, they're with their wife. You don't count sleeping time as being with anybody. You're in your unconscious world. So you're with that person, what, 5 hours a day? 4 hours a day? 4 hours a day, let's say, max. So if you're spending 5% of your time, you know what I'm saying? That's a lot of time in bed, that guy. No wonder he's 75 years old and looks 50, he said. But his technique for dealing with pain was very interesting. He said he grows his thumbnail longer before going to the dentist, and then he sits and he grinds it into his palm, the other palm. He gives himself pain. It's like a homeopathic treatment. It's like cures like. It's not a bad idea. I'm going to try it the next time. The family complains my fingernails look like talons anyway. It's like a little on the, but you grind it into the palm. That's interesting. Well, you shut your eyes till you black out when you go into the MRI, the clicking. I don't like the claustrophobia. I don't like an MRI. I don't like the clicking part of it. It's like the tomb. I wonder if magnets are worse on your long... You know what I mean? Like, we know that the high-fast CT scanners, the CT scanners, it's equal to like 200 x-rays now. How many of those do you get now when you go... It's frightening the amount of... you know, that people are getting blasted with radiation, with the x-rays now. It's not that they're all greedy, the doctors. Only about 98% of them are running it for the billing. The reason they're doing it is to make sure that the greedy brother-in-law lawyer doesn't sue you for not having diagnosed you properly. So instead of just doing medicine intelligently, they have to run procedures for afraid that the brother-in-law will sue you. Sue them, rather, for not doing their job of doing proper diagnosis. This is another reason the healthcare system is out of control. So one of the ways to rein in the medical costs is to put a highway patrolman in outside every emergency room, and if you don't have citizenship, you're not treated unless it's a catastrophic illness. That's number one. Number two, tort reform. Very seriously, most important thing we could do is rein in the greedy lawyers. Tort reform, tort reform, tort reform. State of California introduced it in 1978. The maximum you can collect is $250,000 on a lawsuit against a doctor. It certainly hasn't stopped medical care in California, has it? It has to be introduced nationwide. It won't happen because they lobby both parties. The lawyers lobby both parties. Kansas City, Rick, you're up on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Michael, I don't know how things work out in San Francisco, but here in the Kansas City area, you know, we get a postcard every 6 months for our dentist reminding us that we're up for a teeth cleaning. And, of course, you make excuses like, I've got a cold, my wife's got a cold, my mother got a cold, and so you're trying to avoid going to the dentist, but what happens is when you get there, you know, they greet you very nicely, and then a beautiful girl comes up and says, Ricky, come in. And so they sit you on a chair, and they start doing small talk and all that. And you got your wife and says, remember, I have very sensitive teeth, so you have to put that ointment on my teeth. And says, oh, don't worry.
You mean they treat you nicely, the hygienist?
They do. The hygienists are the best. And
well, out here, you see, the problem in the San Francisco area is half of them are a result of sex change operations, so you don't want them getting too close to you.
See, you don't know who's going to clean your teeth.
Well, you don't know. You don't know who's even cleaning your teeth, what it was before surgery. You don't know what you're getting out here.
You know, but years ago, they used to use the drill, and they'd be drilling, and then they'd take those metal things and start scraping between your teeth.
Oh, God, that's what I had. He was not only grinding, he was looking for a screw to remove a tooth that he had put in on an implant, and he couldn't find the screw. He put too much cement and cotton in it last year. I was there for about 40 minutes with him grinding away. I felt like somebody had a wrench inside my head.
Yeah, but a few years ago, they went to these new machines that have high compressed water with some kind of powder in it. It takes like crap, and then they're shooting it on your teeth. And by the time
it hurts.
You get out of the dentist, your gums are bleeding, your lips are bleeding.
Yes. Yeah, horrible. I much preferred the scraping machines years ago than the high frequency water spray myself.
And have you noticed that they're talking to you all the time, and you're with your mouth open?
No, that's interesting. Being in the talk radio business, I can actually talk with drills and bits in my mouth. It's actually a trick thing to do, and he understands me. It's my only way of staying sane is engaging in a conversation. I'm back on my back, and he says something. I don't know, he says something to me. I only have a little bit more. I almost found it. I can't find it. Don't worry, I never lost one yet. And I'm going, yeah. And he understands. They learn another language in dental school. You know, they're born politicians when you think about it. They say about as much as a Democrat does, Rick. I mean, it's about as much sense. I guarantee if I'm elected, I'll guarantee that deficit. Oh, boy. Play that piece for the audience who just tuned in. And this is me yesterday in the dental chair that Charles found. He actually had it recorded. Let's hear it right now, Charles. You got it ready to go?
I'm not going into that cafeteria. That nerve's already dying. A live, freshly cut nerve is infinitely more sensitive. So, I'll just drill into a healthy tooth until I reach the pulse. Unless, of course, you can tell me that it's safe.
Oh, horrible, 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 horrible. All right. That's an outtake from Marathon Man with Dustin Hoffman. Horrible movie, remember? The torture with the chair, with the dental. Well, as I say, it's all part of life. You know, we all need dentists. Take a look. If it wasn't for dentists, where would Andrea Mitchell be? If it wasn't for dentists, where would Anderson Cooper be? Everyone has perfect teeth. Did you notice in the media? Beautiful, perfect white teeth. You think they're natural teeth? You must be joking. 99% of them are false teeth, implants, attachments. I'm glad I'm not in television. This way you don't know what my teeth look like, nor do you care. Teeth are a very big, important part of the human condition. That's why I was joking today about dentists. I understand Obama's going to give out dental stamps next, in addition to food stamps, pet stamps, hair stamps. I understand that under Nancy Pelosi and Obamacare, they're going to consider giving out dental stamps so the government can get your dental care as well, so you have a smile, a movie star smile. There's no limit to the government handouts, but remember where it's all going. In the old days in Chicago, they would give out $5 bottles of brandy to get the bums on the Bowery to vote. Now they give out food stamps. Instead of giving out cherry brandy, they give out food stamps. Do you actually believe anyone on food stamps would vote for a Republican or a conservative or an independent? No, and that's why the country is doomed. So I have to end this hour by saying common sense would dictate that if you're on government assistance, you lose your right to vote for that period of time that you're on assistance. It has a double benefit to society. One, it encourages you to get back on your feet so you can vote again. And two, it does not permit you, the welfare class, to continuously vote yourself raises. I'm Michael Savage. Common sense doesn't pay.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Here are the stories that made it to michaelsavage.com. If you missed my interview with Ron Paul yesterday, it is on the michaelsavage.com website on the top right. Ron Paul warns Savage of next bubble burst. Okay? On the left top from the Business Insider, here's the problem with this market crash. On the right from the Chicago Sun-Times, Hollywood stars frolic at Obama birthday bash. On the left from WND, Savage, America has been hoodwinked. From CNN, food stamp use rises to record 45.8 million. 15% of the U.S. population relied on food stamps in May, up 22% since Obama took power. 16 countries file briefs against the Alabama law. Can you believe this? 16 countries around the world are attacking our sovereign state of Alabama to make sure that 16 countries can continue to flood their unwanted citizens into our nation. Also on Michael Savage, stocks erase early jobs fueled gains. We saw that one. Libyan rebels say NATO airstrike killed Gaddafi's son. Should we cheer that? Carried to the media, don't give equal time to the Tea Party. No, give it to the Communist Party. Kerry says give it to the Communist Party. Why not? The Tea Party is us, Schmendrick. Ex-White House counsel to the IRS. Pull the tax-exempt status of Media Matters. Amen to that, brother. Obama ate up most of the debt limit in one day, and he partied on. Director Weinstein to host a $71,000 couple dinner for Obama. Obama, Congress to blame for economy. Really? 69% say scientists likely have falsified warming research. No kidding. Likely. What else is on my website? Accused Brooklyn child killer deemed fit to stand trial. Albino Muslims terrorized after one marries a Christian. You see, it's a very tolerant religion, Islam. It's actually a religion of peace and of tolerance, if you listen to Obama and Nancy Pelosi. Muslim man sues employer for firing over beard. Here's a sad one. Prof leaves class in Philadelphia and then jumped off a balcony. Killed himself during a math class. Here's one that's inspirational. How's that? Here's two that are inspirational. Holocaust survivor raises a fist to death. He's 101 years old. He lives in Los Angeles. You're never going to believe how this man survived. It's worth going to my website just to read that story from the LA Times on michaelsavage.com. Holocaust survivor raised a fist to death. He was a tough kid at 15. He fought Jew haters by punching them in the nose. And he refused to go into the death camp. Instead, he went into the sewers and came out alive. I don't know that any of us could do that. Buddhists buy 534 live lobsters and free them. Okay. And here's another positive story. Marine Mammal Center returns healed sea lions to the sea. It's actually a beautiful story. These are 10,000 sea lions that have been rescued by a marine mammal rescue center here in Marin County, California. Really worth a worthwhile group. They actually do something as opposed to most animal rights groups, which just seem to sue. Savage to make his fiction debut, a thriller sure to score a bullseye with its target audience, abuse of power. Buy your copy now on Amazon.com. All of this and more on MichaelSavage.com. Okay, moving on. We begged the president. We cajoled the president. We told the president, don't keep spending. Rein in your spending. Balance the budget. Instead of doing that, him and Reid said, you know what? Go to hell. We're going to raise the budget. We're going to bust the budget. Instead of reining in spending, we're actually going to spend more. we don't care about a balanced budget. And then they got their stooges in the media to say, oh, balanced budget. Come on now. We can't balance our budget. Why, that's crazy. You had all the drug addicts in the media, the leg crossers, saying, we don't need a balanced budget. No, we don't need that at all. There's no reason for a government to balance its budget. And there's absolutely no reason for these crackpot Tea Party activists to be calling for any kind of fiscal restraint. Why, they're all addicted to some kind of stupidity. See, they were copying, they were reversing everything that they were doing. Hey, if you think that's bad, how about identity theft? What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now, 1-800-LOCK-485, and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485, call now. The liberal economic policies of Jimmy Carter and of Barack Obama are actually insane. Remember the primary theorem here. Liberalism is a mental disorder. And I'm telling you that liberalism is a mental disorder that's now playing out in the financial markets as well. The fact of the matter is, you can't keep plundering the American taxpayer without it coming home to roost. The fact of the matter is Obama rammed through a bigger budget than ever. The fact of the matter is that Harry Reid rammed through a bigger budget than ever in spite of stagnant revenues. If your family's income was not changing from one year to the next, would it be wise financially for you to accelerate your spending so you'd feel richer? That's what Obama and Harry Reid just did. That is what your government just did. And the fact of the matter is we begged them to put our fiscal house into order. We asked for fiscal conservatism. Instead, we got fiscal socialism all over again. We asked for a Budget Control Act. They said go to hell. We asked them to cut spending. They said go to hell. We asked them to do something about the entitlements. They said go to hell. Instead, they said, well, our revenues are about $2.2 trillion a year. So instead of staying within our budget, well, let's see if we can spend about $4 trillion a year. We said, wait a minute, that's crazy. The revenues aren't going to go up. They said, oh, yes, the revenues will go up. We're simply going to tax the middle class and we'll call the middle class the rich. Did you hear what I just said? Just follow the bouncing ball and watch out when he says he's going to tax the rich because he means you. When you consider how many people in this country don't pay taxes, when you consider the vast army of 30 million illegal aliens who are sucking us dry, both with medication and education, and nobody will take on the sacred lobbying cows of these lobbies, when you consider the fact that the only people who are ripe to pick are you and I, the working class of America, remember, don't ever forget this. You are the working class.
Savage.
Instead of balancing the budget, instead of hearing the middle class, instead of saying, you're right, we're spending too much, the president gave us the middle finger. And along with the other craven members of the Democrat Party and some Republicans, they gave us a giant middle finger and they said, drop dead. We're going to raise the debt limit. We're not going to balance the budget. We're going to spend more. You can't do anything about it. Drop dead. I'm going to a barbecue. Have a nice day. That's exactly what happened. Now, Obama has attacked our economy from the day he took office with his rhetoric and with his policies. Let me repeat it if you missed it. Obama has attacked our economy from the day he took office, both with his anti-business rhetoric and with his anti-business policies. What you are seeing is the birds coming home to roost, so to speak. If you care to disagree with me when I say to you, there should be no such thing as entitlements, and if there are entitlements, that's fine if we can afford them, but we can't. Therefore, we have to adjust the entitlements. Therefore, we have to raise the retirement age to 70 or 75. And therefore, we must cut back on unlimited medical care and charge a large copayment. And most importantly, because this is something we could do immediately, is put a state trooper in every emergency room in America. And you must have a citizenship card in order to use the emergency room. Period. End of story. We can't afford to support everyone from Mexico and Ecuador and from China and from Russia. We can't do it. Put a cop, put a guard, put a state trooper in an emergency room. You must show your citizenship to get treatment. Now, of course, if it's a catastrophic accident of that nature, we're a humane nation, you're not going to be denied treatment. Otherwise, we're not treating you for every sniffle with $10,000 worth of medical care. This is common sense, what I'm saying to you. This is not hateful. This is not angry. This is reality. Period. End of story. And you want manufacturing to come back? make me the manufacturing czar. Day one, 20% tariff on Chinese goods. Day one, 20% tariff on Chinese manufactured goods. 20% on Chinese manufactured goods day one. Within 60 days, you'll see orders coming into American factories that they can't even they could never keep up with. And what they will have to do is hire more people, expand their factory lines, build new factories. There'll be a boom in America like we haven't seen since 1950. And it will happen when we have a sane, rational, people-loving government. It will not happen as long as we have a mob running this country. I don't know how else to put it. It's very ugly rhetoric, I understand. But we're living in very ugly times when you see the equivalent of Al Capone running the United States of America. Kevin in New York, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, thank you. I'd like to say that the tax increases, the debt limit increases, also coincide almost all the time with tax breaks for the super rich. And that taxes
all right, Kevin, I recognize that you're limited in your economic understanding. And I know you didn't hear the opening of my show where I talked about Barack Obama as a descendant of Vladimir Ilyich Lenin. But do you know that in 1987, the richest 1% of Americans paid one quarter of all income taxes, and that the bottom poorest paid 6% of all taxes? And you know in 07 what happened? The richest 1% paid 40% of all income taxes, and the bottom 50% of earners paid just under 3%. So how does that fit your argument that the rich are getting richer while the poor are getting poorer, when the rich are paying more taxes and the poor are paying fewer taxes? How does that work, Kevin?
Because the rich aren't actually paying more taxes.
Where do you come up with this from? This is something that you get out of what? Your mother was a communist on the oil cloth in Brooklyn?
Not at all. When President Kennedy was...
Wait a minute. Sir, I'm one of the rich. I'm a very successful author and broadcaster. I pay a full amount of taxes, both state and federal. My state taxes are over 10%. Are you aware of that? I don't have any lawyers who can jury rig that. Where do you get the idea that we don't pay taxes?
I'm not saying tax the individual except for the super rich. I mean, like George Soros. How much?
Well, how about General Electric? How do you feel about Jeffrey Immelt of General Electric, and that corporation pays no income tax in the U.S.? Does that bother you like it bothers me?
Yes, it does. This is what I'm trying to...
So, therefore, a guy like you on the left and me in the center-right can agree that large corporations who have evaded taxes entirely are conducting themselves in a criminal manner, and they should be the target of a congressional investigation. This is what I'm trying to say.
Right, but it's not just corporations. How much is Jeffrey Immelt paying in taxes compared to an average American making...
I really don't know. I don't know because he's a private individual. I just don't know what his tax returns are. I'm sure he has to pay, you know, the 37% or whatever the taxation rate is for people who earn over $1 million a year.
Right, but then he gets all the tax breaks, which reduce that 37% to possibly, say, 29%.
You may be right about that. I do not know, truthfully, Kevin. What income bracket are you in yourself?
I would have to say I'm lower middle class now.
All right, but you have a resentment towards the rich, which is understandable. This is an age-old resentment. But you're actually arguing that the corporations who are evading taxes should pay more?
Yes, but also individuals.
Well, let's make believe you and I just met, and I'm a rich guy compared to you. I'm over 60 years of age. I've been working since I'm 5 years old. I've done very well because no matter what society tried to do to me, no matter how many different ways I was kicked, I wouldn't quit because I was raised to fight and I was raised to work. I could have retired years ago and I'm still working. If my taxes are to go up, I'm giving you an example right now, Kevin. If they were to raise my taxes next year, I would quit radio and a lot of people would not have an income. Do you understand that?
Yes, but have you not benefited over the past decade from tax breaks?
No, I have no tax breaks. What tax breaks? I pay retail. I pay retail. There are no real trick tax breaks for the individual paying taxes, Kevin. There are none.
Well, you said you were rich.
Yeah, I'm rich because I worked my behind off. That's why I'm rich.
Well, no, I didn't take
it from you. Did I take it from you?
No.
All right, so where do you think I wrote a book and it did very well. Does that mean I stole it from somebody?
No, not at all, people.
All right, so if a singer sings a song and produced a CD and it sold millions of copies, should they not earn money on that CD because they had talent and people bought their record or their CD?
No, but they should pay taxes on what they earned.
But they do pay taxes. They do pay taxes, and their taxes make certain that those who work in the record industry are rewarded, just as the sale of my books keep a lot of people employed, the publishers, the printers, the distributors, the advertising agencies, the shippers, they all have jobs because people have books that occasionally hit. You know how many books don't hit? 99 out of 100 don't make any money at all. They live off the 1 out of 100 that do make money. So you can't suddenly punish the successful and expect them to kill themselves to write a book, can you?
No, I don't want to punish the successful. I want them to pay their fair share.
What would a fair share be? What percent should we be paying?
Well, I can't actually say what a fair share for a super rich.
My federal tax in my case is, I think, 37%. My state tax is around 9 or 10%. Is that enough, or should I pay more?
No. But what about the people...
Well, I don't know, no. You mean I shouldn't pay more, or I should pay more?
What about the 1% who are making...
That's another story. I don't know who they are. But when I read that General Electric earned $5 billion in the U.S. and paid no taxes because they hired former IRS agents, it frosts me, as it should frost you, Kevin. And now you have to ask yourself, how did they get away with it? Who is Obama's number one corporate friend? Is it not Jeffrey Immelt? Jeffrey Immelt is his job czar. How do you feel about Jeff Immelt closing down a 115-year-old x-ray plant in Wisconsin and sending it to Shanghai, China? Is that something that should be allowed? I don't think so.
I don't think so either, but if you...
No, I think that the government should stop Jeffrey Immelt from having the authority to ship a factory that he had nothing to do with building. Before this guy was a glint in his grandfather's eye, that corporation had an x-ray plant in Wisconsin. Where does he get the nerve to send that plant to Shanghai, China? It's like the enemy within, for God's sakes.
Well, again, our government actually gives tax breaks to companies that send jobs overseas, so they are waving the flag of America.
You see, at the end of the day, those in the lower middle class like yourself and I, who came from a lower middle class background and worked my way out of poverty, basically, really see the world the same way. We don't really see the world in a different way. I pay my fair share of taxes. I create jobs through what I do. But I really don't want to pay any more taxes because I will quit. I'm taxed to death.
Seven.
Congressman Duncan Hunter was first elected in 2008. And after the September 11th terrorist attacks, guess what? He joined the U.S. Marine Corps, and he earned the rank of captain. That's no small accomplishment. It's a big one. He now serves in the House Armed Services Committee, the Committee on Education and Labor, and the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. That's a lot of committees. Congressman Hunter, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael. Thanks for having me on today. Really appreciate it.
Congressman, you've said that there is no good outcome for national defense in the debt limit agreement. What do you mean by that?
The very first thing is, in the first tranche of debt ceiling increase, they're going to cut defense by about $350 billion. That's a big possibility because they have to pull money out of DOD along with other national security type things. So Homeland Security, foreign operations, State Department. They're going to cut not just from what the president has asked for the next 10 years, but what the Republican budget that we passed earlier this year for the next 10 years as well.
Well, how are the enemies of America going to perceive such a massive cut to our defense budget? It's pretty clear to me what will happen.
I think that they're going to see it as a concession by America, one, in the war on terror, two, in the ability for us to protect our allies. Because not only is this first tranche of money going to cut defense drastically, but the second tranche of money, where defense is classified under the Grand Rudman-Hollings Act as just DOD, they're going to cut money out of there, too. And if we vote no on that vote, when the super committee comes back with these defense cuts, if we vote no because there's tax increases or whatever may be in what the super committee comes up with, and that doesn't pass the House, then the sequestration automatically begins, and that's where defense gets cut by the administration by $600 billion over 10 years. So that's a guaranteed $60 billion a year just on DOD, and that's if we vote no on whatever strange thing that the super committee may come up with. So we're all praying to God that the super committee comes up with something that we can vote yes on, because the lesser of two evils might be what the super committee comes up with, if that makes sense. Now, what that's going to do to us what that's going to do to us internationally is we're going to have to say to people like Israel, sorry, we cannot protect you. Places like Taiwan, sorry, we can't protect you. Haiti, sorry that you had a natural disaster. Our Navy is not fit to come help you out and operate in the Mediterranean. Japan, sorry you had a big nuclear disaster. We can't come help you because we can't afford it. If we have to cut defense by that much, we need to really talk to the American people and tell them, hey, here's missions that we can't do anymore, and we just need to accept that. And these missions are probably pretty integral to what the United States is as the lone superpower left in the world.
Do you believe that in the worst-case scenario, these deep cuts to defense will fundamentally change our status as a superpower?
Absolutely. If these major changes kick in and these major cuts kick in, I think you could see that as the decline of America as the lone superpower, while countries like China and even Russia are back on the incline again, and they're spending more on military, they're building more subs than we are every year, while America cuts, and we're going to have to say to our allies, once again, we can't help you. What that's going to do is our allies are going to look to other places. Our allies are going to look to China, and they're going to say, China, can you help us out? They're going to look to places like Russia and say, Russia, can you help us out? Because America can't anymore, because our military force will have been so hollowed out, especially our Navy, and that's our force projection. So what we're really talking about here is force projection and the ability to make the United States a player in international waters throughout the world. That's what we're really talking about, the degradation of, if these cuts go into effect.
What do you think needs to happen on this super committee for that kind of scenario to be avoided?
They need to come up with entitlement reform, period. Plain and simple, and tax reform, plain and simple. There are tax loopholes. You have companies like GE that don't pay any taxes whatsoever, and you have thousands of companies moving offshore, places like Ireland, China, and India. We need to make the tax code so that we're competitive internationally, but close the loophole so that those 50% of Americans that don't pay any taxes at all, they have to have some skin in this game. It can't all be on the people that create jobs. So that the tax code's got to be reformed, and there has to be entitlement reform, period. And there has to be entitlement reform anyway. I'm only 34. Social Security is not going to be there when I come of age, whatever that retirement age is, in the next 30 or 40 years. Entitlements have to be reformed, one, so they exist, two, so they're sustainable for the next couple of generations. I mean, our job with this super committee is try to guarantee the way of life that we have now, minus the government interference. I mean, people like clean drinking water. They like bridges that don't fall down at earthquakes. But we don't like the overburdening and the overbearing government control and interference in our lives. Get rid of that and reform the rest, the stuff that works. But that's what this super committee has to do. That's a tall building for them to jump, and I don't think they can do it. Thus, those defense cuts come into effect.
Well, who needs to be on this super committee?
The House is what I can speak to. Somebody like Randy Forbes or Matt Thornberry, both very smart guys, both subcommittee chairmen of important subcommittees. They would stand up very well in the House, and they wouldn't let anything happen to defense. The problem is it just takes one senator. That's what I'm worried about the most. It's not the House. We're going to pick good guys. In the Senate, though, you've always got to be careful because, in the Senate, being collegiate and being nice to each other, I think, is sometimes more important than the principles and values of a strong defense and other issues as well.
Are you confident that the debate over this is going to be framed in a way that you will think will maintain our national defense?
I think the Democrats have the upper hand, and here's the reason why. I think quite a few Republicans that weren't familiar with the 80s haven't studied what we had to do with Russia and what Reagan did with military spending, that haven't studied the threats that exist right now, the real threats to our security around the world, and the people that want to, I mean, they truly strive to be able to come on American soil and kill Americans. If you're not familiar with that, then you say, hey, sure, there is waste in the Pentagon, and we can cut there. The problem with that, with those spending cuts are, hey, there is waste, but let's spend the money on things that need to be cut. So my main problem with that is, I think you're going to have both Democrats and Republicans that are not familiar or totally knowledgeable with the threats that America faces that think that cutting the DOD is a good thing and that there is enough waste there to make monumental cuts in order to save other spending programs. And I think that's the wrong comparison. You can't compare America's national security with entitlements. You can't compare defense spending with food stamps. It isn't the same thing. The Constitution charges the U.S. government to protect the American people and provide for our common defense. That isn't the same as providing unemployment insurance to somebody.
Congressman, you've served in Afghanistan. If these deep cuts to defense are made, what is going to happen on the ground in Afghanistan, and how will our mission be affected?
We will concede the war on terror if these defense cuts kick in, period. Whether it's Afghanistan, Yemen, parts of Africa, other parts of the Middle East, our ability to keep tabs on and track Iran and Pakistan, we will concede in Afghanistan and in the other areas on the war on terror if these defense cuts go into effect, because frankly, we won't be able to keep our military ready to deal with a real upfront crisis like a big war breaking out and pursue terrorism throughout the world. If these defense cuts go into effect, we just won't have enough money. So we'll be conceding the war on terror.
Congressman Hunter, thank you for joining us today on the Savage Nation.
Michael, great speaking with you. Thanks for having me on.
This is Dr. Dissident Michael Savage, back in a moment.
Savage.
Reducing the deficit, it's about destroying the public space. It's about destroying a public federal involvement in education. It's about clean air, clean water, food safety, public safety. You name it, they're there to diminish it, destroy it.
Did you hear that? And it's organizations like the AARP who control these leftist politicians. AMAC is fighting back. The Association of Mature American Citizens. Your membership can help stop the left wing. Call 800-255-4199, 800-255-4199, or go to americaisrising.com, 800-255-4199, americaisrising.com. Mr. Obama, put down your barbecue sauce. Let's not raise taxes for the producers. Let's cut their taxes, and you'll see the stocks go through the roof. Let's let the producers keep their money and invest it in their ideas, Mr. Obama, and you'll see the stock market go through the roof. And you see, the fact of the matter is, college Marxists, college Leninists, most of whom have never actually created a product or a service that anybody ever needed, don't have the faintest idea as to what a business requires in order to feed it, to grow it, and to sustain it. They have no idea. They think they can just get up there and they can manage the United States of America. No, we need a businessman to manage the United States of America. Somebody who has created even a mom-and-pop store would do better than Barack Hussein Obama. A failed college teacher. Let's talk about Social Security, because this is something you need to hear. When Social Security was first put in place, the average employee retired and collected Social Security for a period of approximately 5 years because they died younger. Did you hear what I just said? The lifespan was shorter. And so the entire Social Security system was created for a person to collect for about 5 years. The average person now collects on the order of 16 years because people are living longer. That's a good thing that they're living longer. Therefore, in order to sustain Social Security, people are going to have to retire later, like at 75. Okay, where is it written in the U.S. Constitution that you can retire like they've been doing in Europe and then go gallivanting around the world at government expense? Those days are over. Europe's bankrupt. We're bankrupt. The whole world is now in a tailspin, and the rules need to be rewritten. You may not like it. People are going to complain about it. But we have to understand that if Social Security was set up when people were expected to live approximately 5 years collecting Social Security, and now they're collecting for about 16 years or something to that effect, within the range of the numbers that I'm saying to you, we can't afford Social Security the way it is. So the retirement age needs to be pushed up. Most older people are working longer anyway. Most older people want to work longer. They want to be productive. They're unlike Democrats. They're looking forward to working as long as they can, as opposed to just laying on their behinds and playing golf. And so I would say raising the Social Security age initially by 3 or 4 years would be a good start, although I think it should be more like 10 years, and retirement should begin at 75, not where it is today. I think medical benefits are insane in this country. There is more graft, greed, and corruption in the medical system than any other system in the country. And therefore, we need a revision in the way medical care is dispensed in this country. You cannot expect people not to abuse a medical system when it's for free. You've got to increase the co-payments to $25 a visit. You've got to close the emergency rooms across America to illegal aliens. You've got to put a state trooper in every emergency room. They've got to demand citizenship papers for you to get care. And that will save billions and billions of dollars a month. There is a way to do this. There's a sane way to do this. And the fact of the matter is Obama is not doing it. He's doing the very opposite. On to other topics. How can you live in a world without Charlie Parker and Henry Miller? How could you live in a world of illiterate rap artists? How can you live in a world with Anderson Cooper as opposed to a broadcaster with brains? How is it possible? I got one hand on the moon and the other hand on Mars. Some would say I'm reaching for the stars. Play the music. Play the music. Senza fine. Michael Savage, Senza fine, without end. The making of many radio shows, there is no end. I'm the living embodiment of Ecclesiastes. One show into the other. One show into the other, a blur of 16, 17 years. I don't know when I began. 94, 2011, God in heaven. Seems like yesterday. Seems like yesterday. First show. I remember the first show. I'm sitting here late in life, I did radio. I mean, nothing worked for me at a certain point. I was locked out because of affirmative action. They wouldn't hire me. They said white males need not apply. We only need people with lower qualifications in order to make certain that they can wreck the society. And so, therefore, I was basically having to do it my own way. And I sent a tape out to 428 radio stations, and five radio stations said, hey, you're good. Who are you? You know, come work for us. One was in Boston, I remember, and one was in San Francisco, and the rest is history. It's one long blink. It's amazing to me. So what motivates me? What motivates me at this point is Obama. What motivates me are the free radicals like Obama and Harry Reid and all of the other leftists who are destroying this economy and destroying the society while pretending that they are the antioxidants. They are the free radicals who have invaded the cells and are causing the infection. They've turned this into Greece or Belgium or Italy right in front of our eyes. And guys like me get up there, and we're the antioxidants out there to save the cell. And they castigate us and turn us into the problem itself. Unbelievable to me. Play the jazz music. Or else I don't know where I'm going to go with this, and I don't want to go in a certain place. You know what I want to go out with in this hour? I want you to play the Symphony Sid piece. I think I'm in the mood, since it's August, I get to play around a little on radio. No one's listening in August. Everyone's on vacation. They're in Antarctica, Tierra del Fuego. They're in Provence. What are they doing in Provence? They couldn't do in Sonoma or Marin County. Why do people go to Provence? I don't understand it. If you go to Provence, you can come to San Francisco and go up to the wine country and rent a house. Even if it has a little stone in it, you're going to have the same exact thing. You're going to get drunk and make believe you're sipping wine, but really you're just a lush. I love these little stores that are around now all over America, wine-tasting stores. Basically, when I was a kid, they were like rummy bars in Queens. You know, the worst characters in the neighborhood didn't have jobs, like postmen would sneak in there in the middle of the day, and they'd have a quick scotch or something, like a Seagram 7, and go out in their route. Garbage men would go in there. You know, they called them bar, a gin mill, okay? Now they change from gin mill to a wine bar. Same thing, people who are addicted to alcohol, who do you think is in there? Tell you, let me have that one, let me taste this one. I'll have a sip of this, I'll have a sip of that. Basically, it's alcoholism. Nothing wrong with it if that's what you want. It's like a pot club. That's all. Can you play what I asked you for? Jumping with my boy Mike in the nation. We have that yet? With my boy Mike in the nation. With my boy Mike in the nation. With my boy Mike in the nation. Mm-hmm. My boy Mike in the nation. With my boy Mike in the nation. Jumping with my boy Mike in the nation. Let her roll. Remember Symphony Sid? I used to make drive over the 59th Street Bridge, coming at 3 o'clock in the morning. I had to go to college the next day, go to work. But people still do that. I don't understand this. I know guys my age who go to Latin clubs. I don't know what they're going there for. How can they do it? They go there with guys 20 years old. The girls are 20 years old. No one sleeps at that age. They're partying all night, and they go to work in the morning with their menial jobs. If you're a serious person, you can't be out in a club at 3 o'clock in the morning. Who do you think you are, a Hollywood actor who's on drugs, and then they're in rehab, and you're supposed to care about it? Every day is a morning after to them. But I do remember those nights coming home late at night over the Williamsburg, excuse me, 59th Street Bridge. There was a Silver Cup bread factory. Now it's a movie studio, I think. De Niro owns it. I don't really know. It was a movie factory there. There was that Silver Cup bakery, and you'd smell the bread being baked, and you knew you were 6 minutes away from the exit on the LIE that you turned and you get home, and Mom and Pa were sleeping upstairs, and they'd be asleep while you turn that key left in the mailbox, and you take your shoes off so no one would bark, mainly the dog. And you'd go in the house, and there was the smell of home, and you knew you were safe, and the country was run by men who loved America. Yeah. And you knew the military was the strongest on earth. And you knew your mother the next day could walk to the supermarket without being mugged. Yeah. And you knew that people feared the police because they'd get a good beating and be thrown in the back of the car and come out black and blue, and they wouldn't dare mug a woman or hurt a child. Yeah, those were the days, my friends. And on Sunday, there was a church on the corner, and the New York Times would be stacked up to the sky. And the churchgoers would walk past the window to absolve themselves of the sins they committed on the way to the church. And they'd commit the same sins on the way out of the church. Yes, I remember those days well, my friends. So now play a little bit more of Symphony Sid before I say something I don't want to give away. I'll tell you about the time I brought home the fetal pig in the refrigerator. When I was studying comparative anatomy, and my aunt almost went crazy. She found it in the fridge, stuffed in behind the gefilte fish. I never told you about the fetal pig, did I? She was reaching for the food, and there was something in a wrapper. She didn't know what it was. Little did she know, it was Michael came home from comparative anatomy with a fetal pig.
Savage.